You're listening to OWW Radio,
the official radio show of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
All right, so here we are, living it day by day. You are a superstar, and you just said what she used to always say.
Welcome to this edition of OWW Radio. This is the official radio program of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. Each week, OWW Radio will bring perspective to the WWE, TNA, and everything else making news in the world of professional wrestling. My name is David, and this week I welcome Jim Myers to the program. Jim, of course, is better known as the WWE Hall of Famer George the Animal Steele, and he is the author of the new book, Animal. This book is an interesting account of Jim's dual lifestyle as a famous pro wrestler and high school teacher. Jim Myers, welcome to OWW Radio.
Hey, are you interviewing Jim Myers or George Steele?
Well, that's a great question. Actually, as you make very clear in your book, Animal, your recent publication, there's a little bit of both all the time, this dual personality, a dual lifestyle that you've led for a long, long time, right?
You got it. Now you got it. But you're better off to talk to Jim because George says, hey, you, fine. Nice! Not a great radio interview, but it's a great way to open the show.
Sure. Well, I did want to congratulate you on your recent publication, Animal. Why did you think now was the right time to tell your story?
Well, you know, that's a great question, and the honest truth is I'm at the point in my life where there's not a lot left, so I pretty much lived my life, and wrestling is the wildest, craziest business in the world, the WWF, now WWE. It's just a great business. I somehow stumbled through it as a school teacher and a coach at a very top level, which no one else has ever done. So it's kind of crazy that the animal could get out and go coach and come back and survive in both, both businesses. And I think that's what makes it a story. Survivable of both. Most coaches don't last that long either.
That's true.
Have you had a chance to read the book?
I just finished it last week. I thought it was excellent. And, you know, I give you a lot of credit. Anyone who writes a book like this, you're very open, you're very honest about your experiences. I really enjoyed it from start to finish.
Well, the man that's driving me right now is Jim Evans. He's the guy that wrote it for me and with me, really.
Yeah.
It's a lot of the credit. A lot of the blame, David. A lot of the blame. My foes go to me. That's right.
Well, how did you hook up with Jim Evans to write this book?
Jim Evans was a local newspaper writer that was excellent. He did a lot of side stories on some of my athletes, on myself. I had one young man that had died right after he made All-State in football. He did a great article on him, and everything was very, very touching. And the other articles from him was always solid, but with a little humor in there. And I think in our business, humor is perfect. So Jim Evans, there was not a better person in the world to write this book with.
I'm glad you mentioned, mixing in humor, because the book is really funny. I mean, there's a lot of real moments, honest moments that you share with us, but there's a lot of humor as well. So that was a part that I really enjoyed.
Great, because that's Jim Evans. That's the Jim Evans part of it, and I think it was needed.
Mm-hmm.
I did not want another book that was just, I wrestled in Buffalo last night, and I'm going to Baltimore tonight, and I'm wrestling some other guy. I didn't want that kind of a book at all. There's enough of them out there on the market. I wanted to tell a little humor and some of the ribs we pulled on each other, and that's in there. And I wanted to get a feel for overcoming obstacles. I mean, we start off with dyslexia, and then we go on to getting into Michigan State, but having a learning disability, getting through there, and then getting into coaching, and then becoming a wrestler that I never even watched. I was a football guy. So when I started, wrestling, and they started me showing me how to do it, I was angry because I thought they were challenging my integrity as an athlete, because it is a show. And then, it really is. I guess I just blew that, but yeah, it really is. And but the way that we used to wrestle in the business, everything was done in the ring. We knew who was going to win, so it was predetermined, but everything in the ring was real until we got to the finish. So it was very, and now it's more choreographed these days. And it makes it a totally different business. I'm not knocking the business today at all. The business in WWE was very good to me. But the athletes today are much better than what we were. They're mm-hmm. superb athletes. I never got on the top rope and did a double flip. But the other side of the coin, because of the way we did our business, we were much tougher than they are now. Mm-hmm. But they're the superb athletes, and I bow and I give them all the titles in the world.
It's very interesting to address the points you just made, because I, for one, did not know that you were a road agent after you retired, and you did that a job for, I believe, 9 years. And the change in the business was a little difficult for you. You didn't really like it that much. It was hard to adjust to, wasn't it?
It was hard for me to adjust because I'm hard-headed. But the business was moving in the right direction. I just have, you know, I explained that with my matches with Randy Savage.
Yeah.
We had a tussle every day, and a different take. He wanted everything to be perfect, and I wanted everything to be tough. But it worked out to be a great run for 2 years. The neat
sure
thing
did.
About it is, you know, we've talked about the challenges of the learning and so on and so forth, getting to Michigan State, getting out, going on into coaching, getting into wrestling, because I had a financial need. Basically, if you start looking at your life, then I think everybody should write a book. And if you look at your life through the rear view mirror of how things happened, all of a sudden, this dummy, Jim Myers, our George Steele, started figuring it out. Way before I knew him, God was in control of my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
And it led me finally to the Crohn's, which I was deathly ill for 10 years because I am a hard head. And when I finally shut down on the table a couple of times, we went church shopping, and we found a faith, totally altered our life. And as I look back now, you know, in the rearview mirror with Jim Evans, I found that God was controlling me before I knew him.
Mm-hmm.
He'd lead me right to Jesus Christ, and that's where I belonged.
Cowboy Bill Watts wrote the foreword to your book. Why did you choose him?
Because when I was real sick with Crohn's, he called me up and started telling me about some stuff that was going to help me. He did not realize that I had 6 months to live, according to some doctors. And in the process, he told me it was network marketing, and I cussed him out. I said, I've saved my money for my wife, and now you want me to spend my money in a network marketing scheme to make you some money. And he said, after we argued a while, I had not accepted the Lord yet, so a few words flew around. He said, well, I know you can afford it. Why don't you try spending $1,000 rather than all that insurance stuff that you're spending and give it a chance? And we did that. I can't say this stuff helped me, but it was part of the healing process. I also did a lot of other things outside the box from what the doctors were telling me. And at that time, I think Jesus and God started taking over. So Bill was instrumental in me being alive yet. Very close friends over there. And he's a very opinionated hardhead, and so am I.
Mm-hmm.
So we have great discussions on everything. Next guy in there is Kenny Dallaport.
Yeah.
Kenny Dallaport played in the NFL for quite a few years. One of my high school kids, and just a tremendous person. I mean, we talk about football, and that sounds great, but after retirement, now he's second in charge of Blue Cross Blue Shield. This is a pretty sharp, intelligent guy that was a C student coming out of high school, that later on was a Scholastic All-American. So you just see kids' growth, and the book is full of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
A young man came to me years and years ago, wanted to be a wrestler. He was about a 450-pounder, and I said, well, you got to go to college, and this is in the book. He does, and later on he's a two-time NCAA champion, and he couldn't go to college because he didn't have grades. So I sent him to a couple of junior colleges to check things out. He ends up at Iowa or Iowa State and becomes an Olympic hero. And then I walk in the locker room 15 years. I'm all excited about meeting this wrestler that's an Olympian and an amateur. And I walked in, and he said, oh, how you doing, coach? Thank you. And I didn't even know it was the same kid. So that goes all through my life. It's crazy, but it's been great. And I think the book explains a lot of that. And Jim Evans had to put up with a dyslexic character trying to interview me and lead me through it. So, you know, the kudos go to Jim Evans, really. He'll never write another book.
Well,
maybe we'll do another one. Who knows?
Who knows? Well, you are an important part of my wrestling history, because when I started liking wrestling in 1985, I heard these rumors that George the Animal Steele was also a high school teacher and coach. I mean, that couldn't be. That's ridiculous. And then when I found out that this was true, I was blown away. I mean, you know, for a little kid, that was really hard to understand. Did your students, athletes, and people in your community know about George the Animal Steele?
That's a great question, and this is how that worked. Back then, it was all territories, so the WWF television was in the Northeast.
Yep.
When I wrestled in the Detroit area, I wrestled as a student with a mascot. So the kids really didn't know it, but occasionally somebody would move in from the Northeast, and I would see kids gather around them, and they'd have a magazine, and I'd go, here we go. So they'd bring the magazine up, and the kids from the East that had just moved into Madison Heights would say, that's you. I'd look at it and say, and, you know, kind of roll my lips and look at it and say, do you really think I'm that ugly? What's he going to say? And then I would say, well, he's George Steele, but I guess we do look a little bit alike. And so it was tongue-in-cheek for me, and I think tongue-in-cheek for them. In 1984, I was in Madison Square Gardens on a Saturday night. The following Monday, I was on a football field in Madison Heights, and my wife went through the process that we always went through. We've got to get George in the box and get Jim out of the box. And so we get Jim out. I'm on the football field, and we do, you know what jumping jacks are, side straddle hops?
Sure.
That was our first calisthenics warming up. And when the kids broke down, there was 90 green tongues in front of me. I knew I was caught.
Well, I love that quote, get Jim out of the box and put George in the box. You talk in the book about your struggles in high school. One thing we should point out, though, is you did meet your future wife, Pat, there. You've been together ever since, so congratulations on that.
Well, I got to tell you about that, too. Pat invited me to a Sadie Hawkins Day dance on a dare. Four other girls, these are the top girls in the school, and here I am, the slug of the school. And on a dare, they said, well, who's going to invite Moose Myers? She said, I'm not afraid of him. I'll invite him. He won't go anyhow. 58 years later, she's my angel.
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. It's amazing you really did live this dual existence. You talk in the book about your schedule. It was ridiculous. Football games on Friday nights, then wrestling like four shows on Saturday, you know, doing TV work. Looking back, it's crazy. It's probably something that we'll never see again, though, right, because of the money in pro wrestling today.
Nobody will ever repeat what I did, and that's not because I was so great at it. Nobody else is character enough to do that. I mean, to pull it off and come back and forth, and at that time, I could leave for 6 months, 8 months, and come back and start all over again. Nowadays, it's just it's a totally different business. Totally different, and again, kudos to Vince McMahon and what he's done with his father's business. Nothing but respect for that, but I'm so glad that I had my opportunity in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and then later on in the 90s as an agent.
One of my favorite stories in the book, if you could tell quickly how you met the Sheik for the first time.
The original Sheik, he lived across the sand dunes from us, and he would work out, and I'd work out, and later on, he was kind of like one of my mentors. A lot of my learning was from the old Sheik, the original Sheik from Detroit.
You talk in the book about, you know, it was a very tough time for you financially. Things at Michigan State weren't going so well. So you ended up taking a job at the State of Michigan Boys Vocational School, and that was kind of your first experience in coaching, right? And that really clicked with you, and you really seemed to enjoy that.
That was, you know, we had a lot of great kids that had screwed up. And they would be there. Treat them with love and treat them with respect, but demand respect. And when they'd get out, they'd come back again. So I was offered a job to stay there for about $9,000, and I refused to take that and went to Madison for $4,300 because I wanted to work with kids before they got in trouble because I could see them coming back and repeating the same offenses and when you get back in your same environment and so on. So I kind of wanted to block that. We sure had our share of kids in Madison Heights that could be moving in that direction. So I was led to really help kids, to be honest with you.
So there's a great quote in the book where you say that, quote, coaching is what I believe God put me on earth to do, even more so than yanking hidden objects out of my wrestling trunks. I mean, that's a fascinating quote from one of the most famous pro wrestlers of all time.
And it says it all, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. What part of professional wrestling, once you decided to go into professional wrestling, what was the hardest for you to learn? I know you were very physical, so I'm sure that the training was something you enjoyed, but what aspect of the business was the hardest for you to pick up?
Once I learned the art of working a match and controlling the crowd, In other words, beating on the baby face, the good guy, until we got our heat, and then letting him make a big comeback on me, and then stopping it off. And those matches would take 40 minutes. And it was like leading an orchestra. It was fun. It was high IQ stuff, believe it or not. I call it ring psychology. And that's, they can't do that anymore because of the TV time and the breaks they got to take and so on. But that was a fascination for me. And I got to tell you, pro wrestling touched my life in so many different ways. The WWF, as I grew as a wrestler worldwide, my confidence and self-confidence grew. And so I think I became a better coach, a better teacher, a better person because of running around with the weapon in my leotards and whacking somebody. But it was part of my growth and an important part of my growth. And I look back at that. I mean, who would have thought? Come on.
Well, you were wrestling around the Detroit area, and then you had the chance to meet WWE Hall of Famer Bruno Sammartino. He suggested you come to Pittsburgh, and that really seemed to change your life. Explain a little bit how Bruno made a huge impact on your career.
Well, I went to Pittsburgh, and Ace Freeman, who was the promoter, I had my mask and my student thing, and they said, no, we don't want a student, we want you. And I said, well, I can't use my real name because of the teaching and coaching. So one of the guys there said, well, this is the Steel City, why don't we call him Jim Steele? I said, I don't like the Jim. Somebody else said George. I said, that's it. So that half of my body is only 46 years old. The rest of it's starting to give me a little problem, but the 46-year-old part's good. You know, I'm 76 now with the Jim Myers part.
When you went to Pittsburgh, then you did stop wearing a mask. Were you concerned about people, you know, even though it was territorial back then, kind of figuring out, oh, you know, putting two and two together, and now you wouldn't be able to keep your life separate as a teacher?
It never happened. I told you the kids would come with the magazine, and we'd turn that off. I wore the mask in the Michigan and Ohio area. When I went back to the Northeast, I was a student, so I was playing three lives, the student, George Steele, and Coach Myers.
And that's incredible, given today's social media. I mean, imagine how different your career would have been with the social media and, you know, the internet and the exposure that the wrestlers get today. It's pretty remarkable.
It would not have happened. It could not have pulled it off. There's no way that we could have, with the social media, had George Steele and Jim Myers at the same time. Thank God I was in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
Right now it just wouldn't work. And I'd have to make a decision, and I would probably leave the money on the table and teach and coach today. When I used to come back to teach and coach, I left a lot of money on the table that I could have made in my wrestling career, but my other part of my life was more important. And that kept my family together, and it was really what it was really all about for me. I started wrestling as a part-time job in 1962, and I maintained it until 1985 as a part-time job. Then it became pretty well known.
I thought it was a really interesting part of the book when you talked about how you were very profitable for the WWWF at the time because they could tape your matches and then show them over the course of a couple months while you were back teaching. So it's just incredible
right.
how this really worked for you at the time.
Well, they saw an unusual talent in me. They took an advantage of us.
Then you did have the opportunity to play semi-pro football, but you met Vince McMahon Sr. He brought you to New York in 1968, and that seemed to really change your life also. The bright lights in Big City, and it seemed to be a lot of fun for you and Pat.
No, for me. I left Pat at home. That was one of the problems. George Steele was really out of the box. It was a whole new thing. Remember, I was a strange character to begin with. I lived a lifestyle that, you know, thank God that they accept you even after you've screwed up big time. Because I was a screw-up. On the road at first, are you kidding me? I was wild-eyed and bushy-tailed.
There's a story about you taking her to the Copacabana. I enjoyed that one.
That was great. And that's the kind of thing that she enjoyed. I was kind of embarrassed because today I would give the guy, well, not today, but 10 years ago, the tip I'd give him $100 and a couple more to get better treatment. But I wasn't quite ready for that in 68.
I really like the part of the book, Jim, where you talk about your time in Japan. The first time you went to Japan, it seemed like a great experience. The second time, your reception there was different. Can you explain a little bit what changed between your two trips to Japan?
Yeah, the promotions. When I first went there, Giant Baba and Inoki were partners. The second time I went, they had split apart. I went in for Giant Baba, who had a great relationship with the WWF at that time. And then when I went in for Inoki, I had a little bit of a problem with him the first time I went. I didn't understand the difference in Japanese and American pro wrestling. And the guys also filled my head full of stuff that these guys will try to beat you. You got to really know. So we got in a man in a tag team, and he come at me really stiff. So I went right back at him stiff, and it got him really angry. And in fact, one point he said, "I break your leg," and I kicked him in the head. So we weren't getting along as friends real good. And the next time, the third time I went over, he was the boss. So now here's the guy that I've had a problem with that's the boss. And so, you know, just plus the first time I went, the round eyes, the American wrestlers were huge celebrities. The second time I went, they were still huge celebrities. The third time I went, they were just like what we call in the States, I call them carpenters, some people call them job guys. But we were over there for one reason, and that was to make the Japanese really look strong. And so the whole nature had changed.
How did you use the quote-unquote fear factor, as you called it, to establish George the Animal Steel as a superstar?
The fear factor was when I would leave the ring. Back in the early days, security was not that good. And people would come at me. I'd just look at them and go at them, and the fear factor would open up the path for me to get to the dressing room. Some guys had to fight their way to the dressing room. I just scared to tell you, I chased people as I went to the dressing room, never had a problem. I had a couple of lawsuits because people tripped over each other, but those were frivolous and never went anywhere.
Whose idea was it for you to start eating the turnbuckles?
We sit down in a conference room for 3 hours and decided what would be different. That never happened. Back in black and white TV time, back in Pittsburgh, to get a crowd into the studio wrestling, they used to give away different gifts, and one of the gifts this particular time was couch pillows. So they give this lady a couch pillow, 300 of them actually, but this lady got mad at me and threw her couch pillow at me. So I know if I throw it back at her, I'm going to get hit with 300 of them. If I sit down on it, it's going to get boring, so I bite it, rip it, start throwing it in the air, and as the stuffing comes down, it sticks in me like the abominable snowman. From there, take the pillow and put it over my opponent's head. And I'm choking him, it's great TV, and when I pull it off, he's blue because the stuffing is lighter than air, and every time he took a breath, it went down his throat and almost killed him in his lungs. So when I went to the dressing room, all the guys were laughing, and somebody said, "Well, you almost killed that one." Somebody else said, "Well, if you could get somebody to throw a pillow at you every night, you might really have something special." And another guy, trying to be sarcastic, said, "Yeah, maybe you could eat the turnbuckles and stuff that at him." We all laughed. 2 weeks later, I was working with one of the real great superstars of the WWF, Jay Strongbow, Chief Jay Strongbow, and the match just was not getting over. So I looked at the turnbuckle. I thought, I wonder. I'm going to take a snack at it. It turned real easy. I tore it off. I rubbed his face in it. I threw the stuff in the air. I ran his hair. From a very boring match, maybe. I don't know. They weren't reacting. We had a riot. So it didn't take a whole lot of study to figure out that the turnbuckle idea was a great idea. It was much better than a hammerlock.
Well, you must have gotten some strange looks when you would go around town. I mean, as your celebrity grew and George the Animal Steel became bigger and bigger, what were the reactions you get from people when they saw that you were a normal guy and you could talk and your tongue wasn't green?
They never saw that. If I stopped in a restaurant or a bar, which I did it often, and somebody would walk up to me and, "Hey, George," I'd look at him like, "Hey!" Just to make a little move for the fear factor, and they were gone. So I never really showed my... Jim Myers was from Madison Heights, Michigan. Jim Myers was never in New York, Boston, or Philadelphia. That was George Steele territory, and he was a wild man, crazy man, and he kept it that way inside and outside the ring.
Wow. Well, that's pretty interesting. Of course, in your career, you were a hated, hated heel, and then you became a lovable fan favorite. Did you prefer either one?
Oh, absolutely. I love being the hated heel. That's me. That's my nature. I love that. But later on, though, when I came, I don't call it a baby face. I became a cartoon character. Hey, you, nice. With a teddy bear or whatever, the mind doll. That was strictly business. I understood the business. Most guys in the business at that time wouldn't go that direction. They wanted to keep it real and tough. Well, the business was changing. We weren't selling wrestling anymore. We were selling lunch buckets and you know, other stuff.
Sure.
By the mid-80s, in the middle of my career, we were selling, our merchandise was on the level, or bigger than the NFL. So, you know, merchandise became a huge thing. I understood that. So who's going to buy a nasty guy? Who's going to buy his merchandise? Somebody will feel sorry for George and buy one for, you know, the lovable cartoon character. That's what that was all about. It's always about business with me.
Well, what a change in the business you saw when Hulk Hogan and Vince McMahon, they went global, of course, with the success of WrestleMania. Were you just blown away with the amount of money that was in the business at that time and how it was changing?
It was unbelievable. It was. I was there for the, you know, I was like a surfer at that time. I was there to catch the last big wave of my life, and that was with Randy Savage, which turned out to be huge. A two-year yep. run, and it was right, you know, around 39 main event on almost every one of them shows until I got sick and left. We were involved in everything at level two. You know, Hogan was level one. We were level two. We were the second biggest stars in the WWF at that time. And, you know, that's crazy, really and truly, because I was 50 years old. I was a dinosaur running with the Young Bucks.
I mentioned that that's when I started to become a wrestling fan. And even though I kind of knew that wrestling was a bit predetermined, I believed, Jim, in the characters. And that's why you and Randy Savage and Elizabeth were so important to me. Would you say that's missing a little bit today, in that belief in the actual characters?
Well, yeah, and this is why. I developed my own character. Now they have a creation team that will take a talent, look at him and study him a little bit, and they'll create what they want him to portray. That's more acting. Mine was more, you know, I bit my tongue as a kid. I would have gone around going, I lived all this stuff. So it was a real deal for me, and I'd been there and done it, and I kind of knew how to do it. And it was more natural. I think people picked up on it better, and that's the way the business was back then. It's changed. It's a billion-dollar-a-year business now. Do you think I'm going to second-guess that? No way. I mean, I'm proud to be a foundation part of it.
There's just a great chapter in the book chronicling your two-year program with Randy Savage. It's must-reading. It was really, really fun for me, again, because I remember it so vividly. Is it your favorite program of your career?
I love Bruno Sammartino way back when, because we both physically beat each other up. And it was, you know, pecking out Madison Square Gardens every 3 weeks. It was phenomenal. Now, with the way they do things now, I call it the circus, because they only go to maybe New York two or three times a year. We were doing it every 3 weeks and packing it out. So it's a different business again. But I also loved working with Bobby Backlund. And then, yes, what a way to finish your career with Randy Savage. I mean, I was just blessed in so many ways. And again, I look up to the heaven and say, thank you, God.
One thing I always find interesting with professional wrestlers, we, of course, as fans, care so much about the results. Do wrestlers care about the results of the matches, or are you more concerned with just putting on a good show? For example, were you disappointed that you never actually won the Intercontinental title from Randy Savage, or is it more just be a thrill to be involved in the program?
You know what? Let's go right back to the World Championship with Bruno Sammartino, or Bobby Backlund, WWF champion, world champion.
Yeah. Yeah,
I was happy that I was talented enough that I did not need a belt to sell tickets. Mm-hmm. I could sell tickets with my character. Putting a belt on George Steele would be stupid and a waste, because they didn't need it. You put that on somebody that where it might help them with their character and them to build. I mean, I sold out arenas with every champion that they had while I was there. I mean, with Bruno, Pedro Morales, later on Bobby Backlund, and then on later on with Hulk Hogan. So I did all that without a belt. I think that I would have been a waste with a belt around my waist. Plus, I'd had to carry it through security.
Well, you certainly were a big part of the WrestleMania 3 match between Macho Man Randy Savage and, of course, the Dragon Ricky Steamboat, a match so many people look back on as one of the greatest of all time. When you were going back to the locker room that night, did you know, Jim, the match was as sensational as it was and that it would be remembered as this classic?
Yes, I did, but it was not a happy camper. There I am staying in the corner. The only good part about it was I got to look at Elizabeth, and these guys were having a fantastic match. That match was 15 miles from my home. I would have rather been wrestling, to be honest with you. It might not have been as spectacular as theirs, but it would have been a bigger thrill for me. That was a fantastic match. But a lot of people ask me, why was I so smitten over Elizabeth? I'm going to give you a scoop now. It's very simple why I was really impressed by her. My wife, Pat, does not do windows.
What do you mean by that?
I was chasing her to come up to my house and move my windows. My wife didn't like to do windows. No, that's, you know, that's my take on it all.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining me here on OWW Radio. The book is fantastic. It's called Animal. Before we let you go, where can people find you on social media? Do you have a Facebook page, Twitter?
I have Twitter. I have Facebook. I have Jim Myers, a Facebook page, Jim Myers. I have two Georgie Animal Steels. One is Wild Georgie Animal Steel. I'm all over the Facebook thing. Welcome to my world.
I'll definitely post all that information with the interview here on OWW Radio. Again, the book is called Animal. Jim Myers, thank you so much for joining me today, and best wishes to you.
Okay, God bless and thank you.
Have a great day.
You too, man. Bye-bye.
That was our interview with Jim Myers, of course, George the Animal Steel. A lot of information in this book. If you don't know anything about his career, it's very fascinating. From the appearance in the 1994 film Ed Wood, where he played the character Tor Johnson, he spent time in Hollywood. Just a really interesting chronology of his career as a school teacher. There's great testimonials from students that he coached. He was very, very well respected. And he says on page 20, quote, "Success comes in many different forms," unquote. And looking back on his career, as he does in this book, you can see he was successful in many, many different areas. He should be very proud of this book. We want to thank Jim Myers again for joining me here on OWW Radio. The publication is called Animal, and I feel like I learned a lot about his career and how it shaped the person that he became. Don't forget to check out the OWW website at onlineworldofwrestling.com for the latest news, analysis, and updates from the world of professional wrestling. While you're there, you can also catch up on past episodes of OWW Radio. You can email us at radio@onlineworldofwrestling.com to submit topics or questions you would like us to discuss on an upcoming broadcast. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at OWWCOM to get all program updates and announcements. We'll also be posting directly to the official OWW Facebook homepage. Until next time, I am David. Thank you again to Jim Myers, also known, of course, as George the Animal Steel, for today's interview. The book, again, is Animal. Pick up a copy at Amazon. We hope you enjoyed the program, and we'll be back soon with another edition of OWW Radio.
All right, well that's okay.